President Barack Obama has nominated Marine Corps Commandant Joseph Dunford as the next chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. If and when confirmed, he'll succeed retiring Army General Martin Dempsey. But what can we expect from the man nicknamed Fighting Joe? Here with some analysis is retired Army Lieutenant General Dave Barno. He was senior American commander of U.S. and coalition forces in Afghanistan and now a visiting scholar at American University. Dave, great to have you back.
Morning, Tom. How are you?
All right. So what do you think are the skills and qualities in General Dunford that might have made him an attractive candidate or nominee, I should say, to the president?
Well, in a lot of ways, he's the ideal pick to take over the senior most military position at this juncture. And he's also a very logical follow-on to Marty Dempsey, a good friend who has set the tone for civil-military relations in the last 4 years as chairman. Dunford brings a quiet demeanor, an ability to communicate effectively with people that are not in uniform, and a tremendous combat experience that's going to continue to be important as we fight in wars in the Middle East.
Now, some analyses have been published that says that he'll follow in the, the mode of reluctance to commit large-scale troops composed of American troops, that the policy that Dempsey has tried to pursue. What's your feeling about that one?
I'm not sure that's a fair assessment. I think Dunford, as Dempsey would, under the right conditions, would make that recommendation to the president if the situation was dire enough to require that. Dunford was known after the fact for pushing for a somewhat larger American troop presence in Afghanistan. He did that very discreetly, very tactfully, with full respect for the president having the final say-so on that. And I think he'd make his case behind closed doors very strongly for whatever he believed in. That could be big numbers of troops in certain cases, but he also has the experience of knowing what that looks like and knowing the downsides of that.
Yeah, I mean, at some point it gets beyond really the chairman's role because it involves foreign policy itself. And I guess there's always tension maybe between the military and the administration when it comes to what foreign policy should be. But I guess, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's got to be some reticence on the part of the military when they do disagree over foreign policy.
Well, their mission is really to state their case and make the argument for give the president a range of options that he or she can choose from when moving ahead. And they're going to be sitting in the room or sitting in the video conference with the Secretary of State, with the head of Homeland Security, with the director of the CIA, with all the other actors out there who are all civilians, and they have to be able to make their case in language that can be understood and persuade that group, essentially, to persuade the president. Dunford has got experience in spades doing this from his time in Afghanistan, and I think that's one of the prime reasons why the president picked him. He said yesterday in the Rose Garden that he knows Joe and he trusts Joe. That's a big deal in this administration and any administration.
And I guess also Fighting Joe got that moniker when he was in Iraq, even before Afghanistan, correct?
He did. He was a regimental commander in Iraq, which is a fairly junior position in the great military hierarchy, with several thousand Marines under his command. But out there, you know, on the front lines, leading troops in the initial invasion going to Baghdad. And he's moved from that point, which is about, 12 years ago now, all the way to four-star level, heading his service. So he's done remarkably well. But he's also shown that he can be effective at all those levels, down there at the tactical leadership level and then sitting in the highest, conference tables of government with very, very senior civilians that have to make the tough decisions. So he's done all of those things notably well, and that's why he's in the position he is today.
To get to that 3- and 4-star level, maybe even 2-star level, there's a lot of non-military rotations and training that general staff officers tend to get. Give us an idea of what that is comprised of.
Well, the military has a very involved training, professional military education system that brings people from second lieutenant or ensign, where they usually get about 6 months of training before they stand in front of a group of 30 or 40 sailors or soldiers or Marines, all the way up to the war colleges, which you normally go to at about 22 years of service, at lieutenant colonel or colonel. Dunford's done all those. In fact, he went to the Army War College, which is notable. But he also is striking because he got master's degrees from two civilian educations, Georgetown University, where I also have a master's, and Tufts University. And that's somewhat unusual for a military officer to step outside of that purely military educational environment and seek out those graduate opportunities to be able to understand civilians, to be able to communicate and make your arguments in settings that aren't just comprised of military officers. He's done an extraordinary amount of that, and it's going to be very helpful to him in his new job.
We're speaking with retired Army Lieutenant General David Barno, senior American commander of U.S. and coalition forces in Afghanistan, now a visiting scholar at American University. And give us an idea of how the names of possibilities for nomination to the chairman get vetted and rotated to the president. How does the process work leading up to the president says, okay, that guy?
Well, the Secretary of Defense has the critical role there. And again, as with all choices, the president likes to see a range of options. There's been a lot of names bruited about in the media here over the last several months. The commander of Pacific Command, particularly possibly the NATO commander, and typically all the very senior four stars, the service chiefs, which are members of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and also the combatant commanders are potential candidates out there for most of the jobs. But in all cases, it ultimately comes down to who does the president have confidence in? Does he have a rapport? Does he have a relationship with these commanders? He's met all of them at that level. He's had interactions with them. What's the chemistry look like? And I think ultimately that's why the president settled on Joe Dunford, principally because of the chemistry that developed between them and making some hard decisions on the future of the force levels in Afghanistan.
And how hard and fast is the rule that the chairmanship rotates among the military services?
It's not, but it's a long tradition that typically, in almost all cases, you'll never see two services in a row have that job. Interestingly enough, we're going from an Army and a Navy four-star as chairman and vice chairman. Under the new incarnation will be a Marine and an Air Force general as a chairman and vice chairman. So we're actually flipping those services completely. That's more coincidence than it is any type of hard and fast rule. And the president ultimately picks who he has confidence in, who he wants to interact with in that job.
And what about the vice chairman? Is that similar in having not as much to do as, say, the vice president, for example?
It's a very important job. In effect, the vice chairman runs the inner workings of the Pentagon in the sense that the vice chairman's Mr. Inside and the chairman often is Mr. Outside. They interact and flip jobs whenever the chairman is out of town. The vice chairman is the acting chairman, goes to the National Security Council meetings, serves in as de facto the chairman during that period of time, although the chairman himself is always in contact by communications. But it's a very, very important job, and it has tremendous responsibilities in acquisition, in policy setting, and really representing the chairman when he's out on the road. So those are very, very important jobs, and sometimes they're almost interchangeable.
And what is the statutory job of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and what is the reality of the job that they do day to day? How do they differ?
It's a two-year position for each of them. They're nominated, must be confirmed by the Senate. Typically, for both the chairman and the vice chairman, especially for the chairman, those typically are two-year positions, so a total of 4 years. That's what General Dempsey will have completed in September. That's not always the case. The last Marine held the job only held it for 2 years, General Pete Pace, which is somewhat unusual. But typically, you'll see in each case they have to go through a Senate confirmation for their first 2 years and then for their second 2 years. That's true for the vice chairman as well.
And is it possible to survive or in the job over a presidency, over a change in presidency, even change in parties?
That's almost assured. In fact, the system is set up in some ways to do just that, because the intent is that the military is separate from the overall political process. Military officers pride themselves on, being independent from politics and not playing a political role. There aren't Democratic or Republican generals, thankfully. The military is very, very careful to tread a line in between the parties. And so these terms of both chairman and vice chairman in almost all cases will extend over the presidential administration terms. So it's very common that you'll have a chairman come in under one president and go out under another president.
And does the chairman have much to say or much involvement with the preparation of the individual services budgets and their force levels and so forth? Is that pretty much a separate channel of operation and feeding up the chain?
It is. He has certainly an influence on that, and he's responsible to give. He's the principal military advisor to the president, so he's responsible to give the president advice, administration advice on how to shape those budgets. But the services are also very independent fiefdoms; they're their own entities. They're led by two four stars in each of the services as well, and they own the budget. So the chairman can influence that. He can influence policy and strategy. But the services ultimately, put in the budgets they believe in. The Secretary of Defense, who's in the chain of command, can adjust those and does. But the chairman's role is an interesting one because he does not command anyone. There aren't any forces under his control, unlike the combatant commanders out there in CENTCOM or Pacific Command. But he has a tremendous role of influence because he's ultimately the military voice that the president last listens to. So that's a very, very important position to have.
So I guess it's a good quality that no matter which service the chairman comes from, he's got to be purple when he gets into that seat.
That's probably underappreciated by most people, to include most folks in the services, even though Dunford is coming out of being the commandant of the Marine Corps and General Marty Dempsey before him came out of being the chief of staff of the Army, both of them for short periods of time. They in a sense, take off their service hat when they become the chairman. They become a joint officer. Their responsibility is to look at the entire joint picture and to make recommendations based upon what's best for the nation and for the armed forces as a whole, without regard to what service they came from. And that's, it's not a hard transition for most of them because they've inevitably spent time in multi-service or joint assignments coming up. General Dunford did, General Dempsey was the acting CENTCOM commander for a while. They both served on the joint staff in the Pentagon. So they know that world and they're comfortable not being purely advocates for their service in this new job. That's extremely important. That would poison the relationships if anyone perceived that the chairman was pulling harder for his service than he was for the force as a whole.
I suppose that's true. And, of course, every former Marine I've ever known is kind of a Marine for life. It doesn't take long to find that out about them in conversation. And so, final question, within the services, when you get to the three-star, four-star level, how much knowledge of there is one another of the, you know, how much friendships, how much knowledge, how much acquaintances goes across the services, say Air Force to Army to Navy to Marine Corps and so on?
There's a huge amount, especially in over the last 15 years. One of the striking aspects of this America's military is that all of these senior leaders have served together. They've interacted with each other. Many of them have been at war together and fought in Iraq and Afghanistan side by side. That's particularly true of senior Army and senior Marine officers. All of these folks are going to know each other. They're going to have served in the Pentagon in very senior jobs. And there's going to be an easy relationship between most of these folks. Personalities still matter. There are still issues out there between individuals. But these aren't strangers. These are folks who have reputations, and they've worked together under some of the most arduous and often dangerous conditions you can imagine, you know, fighting wars for the last 15 years for the nations and overseas. And almost all of these senior leaders have spent years of their lives deployed away from their families in Iraq and Afghanistan because that's been the nature of the military for the last decade and a half.
Retired Lieutenant General David Barno is a senior American commander of U.S. and coalition forces in Afghanistan, now with American University. Great to have you on, as always.
Thanks so much, Tom.